When Mordecai learned what had been done about the plot against the Jews, he ripped his clothes to shreds and put on sackcloth and ashes. Then he went out in the streets of the city, crying out in loud and bitter cries. He came only as far as the king's gate, for no one dressed in sackcloth was allowed to enter the king's gate. As the king's order was posted in every province, there was loud lament among the Jews, fasting, weeping, wailing, and most of them stretched out on sackcloth and ashes. Esther's maids and eunuchs came and told her. The queen was stunned. She sent fresh clothes to Mordecai so he could take off his sackcloth, but he wouldn't accept them. Esther called for Hathach, one of the royal eunuchs whom the king had assigned to wait on her, and told him to go to Mordecai and get the full story of what was happening. So Hathach went to Mordecai in the town square in front of the king's gate. Mordecai told him everything that had happened to him. He also told him the exact amount of money that Haman had promised to deposit in the royal bank to finance the massacre of the Jews. Mordecai also gave him a copy of the bulletin that had been posted in Susa ordering the massacre so he could show it to Esther when he reported back with instructions to go to the king and intercede and plead with him for her people. Hathach came back and told Esther everything Mordecai had said. Esther talked it over with Hathach and then sent him back to Mordecai with this message. Everyone who works for the king here, and even the people out in the provinces, know that there is a single fate for every man or woman who approaches the king without being invited: death. The one exception is if the king extends his gold scepter. Then he or she may live. And it's been 30 days now since I've been invited to come to the king. When Hathach told Mordecai what Esther had said, Mordecai sent her this message. Don't think that just because you live in the king's house, you're the one Jew who will get out of this alive. If you persist in staying silent at a time like this, help and deliverance will arrive for the Jews from someplace else. But you and your family will be wiped out. Who knows? Maybe you were made queen for just such a time as this. Esther sent back her answer to Mordecai. Go and get all the Jews living in Susa together. Fast for me. Don't eat or drink for 3 days, either day or night. I and my maids will fast with you. If you will do this, I'll go to the king, even though it's forbidden. If I die, I die. Mordecai left and carried out Esther's instructions. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Let us pray. Almighty and everlasting God, may the words of my mouth, may the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable unto you, for you are our rock and our redeemer. Amen. So today we are talking about time, not pollen, but time. And so what I'd like you to do is grab your hymnal out of that lovely rack in front of you. Grab your hymnal and open your hymnal to hymn number 647. 647. I'm going to ask for Tara's help on this. You know, of course, how hymnals work. There are no page numbers in hymnals. They put the page number, instead of at the bottom, up toward the top, and usually amp it up quite large so you can find the numbers. So this is hymn number 647, not page number 647. And our new hymnal, the Glory to God, is now referred to as our new hymnal. It will always be called the new hymnal. The blue one used to be called the new hymnal, no longer. Now that's the old hymnal. This is the new hymnal. And so you'll see that this is categorized in thematically. So this is about Thanksgiving. We would have never known if they hadn't said that. Right above 647, it says Thanksgiving. And so you see 647. Now if you just go down, let your eyes just go down just a tiny bit, you see a gigantic, funny-looking 8. The music people that I've been spending time with tell me that is not an 8, even though it looks like an 8. Tara is whispering that that's actually a G. That's the G treble clef, friends and neighbors, because you'll notice that it sort of circles around the G line, which is the second line up from the bottom line. And then if you go just to the right of that, there's a funny looking B that looks like it might be sharp to touch. That's actually a flat. That's a B flat. That's my music joke for the day. I've made one. I feel good about that. Now this is where it gets interesting. Next to that funny B-looking thing is a fraction. Obviously, a math student has not been taught how to reduce fractions because that should be a 1. 4/4 is 1 anywhere you go. But Tara tells me that that's not actually a fraction, that that's the time signature, right? So this hymn, Give Thanks, is in 4/4 time. Now, I can't say anything else intelligent about music. I'm going to pass it off to Tara, and she'll tell us why it's, why is it 4/4 time?
Because there's 4 beats in the measure, all right. And the beat is the quarter note, so there's 4 quarter notes in each measure.
All right, 4 quarter notes in each measure, 4/4, okay, would this be called common time? Common time, it's very common. You'd find this anywhere. So if we sang just the first 2 lines of Give Thanks in 4/4 time, it would sound like this. Let's sing it. Give thanks with a grateful heart. Give thanks to the Holy One. Give thanks because we're given Jesus Christ the Son. Very good. You guys should be in church. So there you go. Common meter. 4/4, you know, it's got a nice pulse to it. It just seems natural. I wonder if that's because, you know, of our heartbeat. You know, our hearts beat regularly in sort of that kind of a rhythm. We're just used to that, right? Kind of a walk. We're walking into you, three-legged folks. I'm sorry, you're coming up, but. We walk into and hearts beat into, and we inhale and out and outhale. That's not a word. Inhale and exhale into, so that we're just kind of maybe set up for that naturally. Okay. There's another time signature on the next page. If you flip over to 6:49, I will amaze you with what I was amazed with this morning, which is Amazing Grace. I can sing Amazing Grace. I don't need a piano. I kind of know how it sounds. I even know the words. But I was amazed to realize that this was in 3/4 time. And Tara said, of course it is. Because that's why she's there and I'm here. But so let's sing through Amazing Grace. We'll sing through the first verse, and halfway through, she's gonna really three it up for us. She's gonna get real waltzy. It's going to start just like you expect, but it's going to get real waltzy, real Straussy halfway through, all right? Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, now am found. Was blind, but now I see. There you go, very waltzy there. Not requested as a first wedding song very much. Not, you know, no couples are learning to dance so that they can have Amazing Grace at their wedding as their first wedding song. So you got common time, 4/4. You got this 3/4 time, triple. Of course. One song that is in 6/8 time, which is kind of like 3/4, but not, that you know very well, is In the Garden. Did you ever notice that In the Garden's in 6/8 time? Right?
Well, the dew is still on the roses, and the melody that came to me.
This song always makes me laugh a little bit because it is kind of sing-songy, and I can imagine people dancing to it. So my friends and I, we sometimes refer to this as, please forgive me, the Methodist drinking song. That's very inappropriate. I'm sorry. Why you're laughing is because it's so inappropriate. It's also theologically inappropriate because Methodists were teetotalers for so many years. I heard a great story about a great-grandfather smashing bottles of beer while reciting Proverbs, and I thought, Methodist. So, but you can sing, you can, if you really want to ruin In the Garden for yourself, you can sing, you know, I come to the garden alone. Please forgive me. My favorite time signature of all is not 3-4 or 6-8, and it's not 4-4. It comes to us from the Dave Brubeck Quartet, because the song Take Five is a brilliant example of 5-4 time. Now, Dave Brubeck could not be here today because he is dead. But Tara is not, and she's here, and she knows how to play it. And it sounds like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's great. It's amazing. Thank you very much, Tara. And so today we're talking about time, and we had a wonderful passage read to us by David Rogers and preached to us by David Conrad, lots of Davids. And so we're thinking about the time. Every time is appropriate. And we're thinking about what time is it? As we hear Ecclesiastes, everything is proper in its own time. And so as we hear about a time to be born and a time to die, a time to keep silence, kind of tough for some of us, and a time to speak out, as we hear about all these times that are appropriate, it sort of begs us to ask, what time is it for me? What time is it for us? Is it 4-4 time? Is it common time? Is it ordinary time? Is it extraordinary time? Is it unusual compound time? Is it, you know, we have to figure out what's God's rhythm in our life right now? What season is it? What is appropriate for right now? Is it appropriate to be silent or appropriate to speak out? We have to hold that passage in one hand. And then we have to go to the other passage from Esther and the question that Mordecai asks. Who knows? Maybe you're in this spot for a time such as this. Now, I told you that there are lots of operas using Esther as the main text, and so far in my research, none of them are funny, which is a real shame, because Esther was a book written for entertainment. It was written to make us laugh. I went to Sunday school for years and years and years before I realized it was supposed to be funny, before an Old Testament professor read it in chapel, and I laughed out loud, and people in the row with me were very certain I was going to hell. But it was so funny. And if it's written for us to laugh, it's also written for us to think, because no one who laughs can't think. Laughter is designed to make us think, to hold two things that are opposite in our heads. That's how jokes work. And so the author of Esther wants us to laugh at ourselves, and to laugh, and to think about what's going on. So it's a really funny book. It's very farcical. You know, if you were a fan of the television show Three's Company, it's very much like that. There's lots of characters running back and forth. Doors are opening, doors are closing. We start out with the king, who is God's own idiot. And he is having a big party. And it's all exaggerated. For 7 days, we're going to have this great party, and everyone's going to come, and you should serve them as much wine as they want. As much wine as they want, sire? Yeah! Even if they seem a little, No, keep serving them. If they want it, you serve it to them. And so they're having this big party. So they've all had enough to drink, so now people are making good choices. And the king says, do you know what would be awesome? Let's get my beautiful wife here. You know, she's really attractive. And they all say, yeah. No, she loves it. We'll get her here. We'll doll her up. I'll parade her around. You guys will see how amazing my wife is and how amazing I am. And so they send a message to her, but she's having her own party, and she refuses to come. And then they're all, what are we going to do now? And someone says to the king, you know what? Let's make another good idea. Let's have another good decision. You should just fire her and get a new queen. Yeah, that's a great idea. Let's get rid of her, and we could have like a reality show, Persia's Next Top Queen, right? And that's what they do, honestly. They have Persia's next top queen. And they have this big contest, and they get people from everywhere. And if you, you know, if you get told that your daughter is in the competition, you really can't opt out. And so everybody comes, and Esther is there, and that's how we meet her. And her name is Hadassah, but they say, we're calling you Esther. And she says, well, that's, I guess that's a nice name. And so she's beautiful. She's more beautiful than anyone else. And after 30 days of beauty treatments, let me tell you, that's really beautiful. And so she wins, hands down. She wins in the final episode, and it's amazing. Now, a couple other characters we need to know about. We need to know about Mordecai. Mordecai is Esther's cousin, but really more like an uncle. And he's kind of taken charge of her. And he's a good guy. We know that because he overhears a plot against the king. And he's sort of, it's sort of like we hear about, if you see something, say something. So Mordecai says something, and he lets the king know and saves the king's life. Mordecai is a good guy. His foil, on the other hand, is Haman. Haman is a bad guy. And Haman, you know, very egocentrical person and And so when he walks into the palace and he kind of nods at Mordecai, and Mordecai won't nod back and won't really acknowledge Haman. And Haman gets really irritated. That really drives Haman crazy. And so rather than, you know, pay somebody in a back alley to sort of knock off Mordecai, Haman decides it'd be a great idea just to kill all the Jews. And that'd take care of Mordecai too. And so he goes to the king, God's own idiot, and says, wouldn't it be great to just get rid of all the Jews? And the king Xerxes is sort of like, yeah, whatever, and he signs it. And then it becomes law. And that's where we are for this morning. That's the passage we're at for this morning. And so the passage for today, even though we imagine this as a conversation between Esther and Mordecai, as we read it, I hope you noticed, it's really not. It's a big job for this messenger who has to run back and forth. So I hope he's wearing his Fitbit. I hope he's getting his steps, because he's going to run back and forth between these two and sort of facilitate this conversation. And this is where Mordecai says, Esther has kept her Jewishness silent because Mordecai has instructed her to do so. But he says to her, don't think that just because you live in the king's house, you're the one Jew who will get out of this alive. If you persist in staying silent, maybe Esther thought, you know, I read in the Bible, there's a time to be silent and a time to speak. And this is my time to be silent. He says, if you persist in staying silent at a time such as this, help and deliverance will arrive for the Jews from someplace else. Now, biblical scholars across the traditions have seen that as a veiled reference to God and God's power. But there is no reference to God in Esther. No explicit reference. So he says, maybe it will arrive from someplace else, but you and your family will be wiped out. And then he says, who knows? And there's a few places in the Old Testament where it says, who knows? And usually after who knows, there's an important theological idea that gets floated very softly, just on the breeze. Who knows? Maybe you were made queen for just such a time as this. So as you and I hear that, we have to hold in one hand Ecclesiastes and this idea, what time is it now for us? And then in the other hand, we have to hold this question, who knows? Maybe God has put you here in this place for such a time as this. We have to hold these two things on our hand and really pay attention and listen. It's very easy for us to identify with Esther. Very easy for us to identify with Esther. Very easy to find sermons where the preacher type standing up here preaches about Esther. We should all be like Esther. We're all here for such a time as this. We need to be brave. We need to have courage. That's a very easy sermon to preach and to hear. But as I struggled with Esther this week, I came to a conclusion that I am not like Esther. I'm more like King Xerxes. I want to confess to you, my brothers and sisters, that sometimes I can be a little bit of an idiot. I can. Now, when I say idiot, I mean something very specific. Idiot comes to us from the Greek word idios. You may know the word idiomatic, right? An idiomatic phrase. Well, in the idiom of the people. But Idios means one's own. One's own. And so if you're an idiot, you're kind of selfish. Your view, your perspective is very limited. You sort of are myopic and nearsighted. You only see kind of what's right in front of you. And so King Xerxes is technically and actually an idiot. Would it be great to have a party? Sure. Would it be great to get a new queen? Yeah. Would it be great to kill all the Jews? Sure. Would it be great not to kill the Jews? Sure. He's just right here. He has no idea, no perspective. And sometimes I'm like that. I'm one of God's own idiots. And if you're honest, you might be an idiot too, right? So that's two things you've learned at church today. Amazing grace is in 3-4 time. You can be a little bit of an idiot. So that's something to talk about at the buffet, if you can elbow the Baptists out of the way. So we tend to be kind of idiotic at times, and we focus on what's right in front of us. We focus on what's easy. I like people that like me. I don't like people who don't like me. I like things that are easy. I push away things that are hard. I always play to my strengths. I don't like to talk about my weaknesses. I like to go around things. I don't really like to go through things. I don't like to return phone calls, especially if it's going to be a difficult conversation. If you are a little bit like that, friends and neighbors, welcome. Welcome to the Idiots Club, because we all can be like that. We have a privileged position because there are Esthers all over, people that face their fears and come to us and speak out. And we are given this privileged position, just like the king, to listen, to chin up, look out, and see what's going on, to really listen at a time such as this. And that's what the king did. Despite his idiocy, he was able to listen and to pay attention. And that's where we are. That's what we can do. We can listen. Pay attention. I was listening this week because I was in the church office and Elena came in, and more importantly, Elena brought Max. Max the dog. If you don't know, that's the third thing that you're learning today. You're an idiot sometimes. Amazing grace is in 3-4 time. And the church has an official dog, and the dog is Max. And Max is the best behaved dog. If there was America's top dog, I would want him to be on that, except it might go to his head. But he's an amazing dog. And so after telling Max how good he was, and he looked at me and said, I know, Elena mentioned that she had made coffee. And so as quickly as I could, and not being rude, I ran out of the room to go get coffee, because it's delicious when she makes it. And while I was there, I noticed that there were many people in Malden Hall that I had to push out of the way to get to the coffee. Many of them had red t-shirts on, and the red t-shirt said, Tampa Hillsboro Homeless Initiative. So after the first few gulps of the coffee, I started to wonder why there were police officer types in Malden Hall, with guns. That didn't scare me. I still pushed them out of the way to get the coffee. But I wondered why they were there and what these people with the red t-shirts were on about. And a few more gulps of the coffee, and then I started to put it all together that on that day, February 23rd, they were doing the count. The count is a count of all homeless folks in Hillsborough County on one day. They do it on one day. They get a snapshot for such a time as this. They get a snapshot of the day so that they don't, if somebody goes, on a Wednesday one place and a Thursday another place, they might count them twice. So they do it in one day. You get a discrete cross-section of the homeless in Hillsborough County. Now, I talked to one guy, and he told me, how many homeless people in Hillsborough County do you think there were last year? Just float some numbers out. You like to blurt. How many? Six what? 6,000, okay. It's a little high. 50, a little low. 200. 1,000, getting warmer. You guys would be good on The Price is Right. So it's 1,817 last year. That seems low, though. Doesn't it seem low? 1,817. So the Esther that I encountered, and he probably wouldn't like to be called an Esther, but his name is Antonio, And he was recruited from St. Louis to come down to Hillsborough County. In St. Louis, they got down to about 1,000. And so they said, we want you to do what you did for St. Louis. We want you to do that here. And so they brought him down and his co-worker, they came here and have started working. And the Tampa Hillsborough Homeless Initiative is sort of a network. They're sort of a network. They bring together people who need to be at the table talking about homelessness. They bring together service providers. And they try to coordinate and to create a continuum of care, is the phrase they use on their website. A continuum of care to help people who are homeless and who deal with issues that homeless folks deal with. I was fascinated. And he said something to me, and it was a total Esther moment, you know, because it made me chin up, eyes out, pay attention. He said, God calls us to things that are hard, not things that are easy. And I said, are you sure? I like the easy thing. You know, I'm God's own idiot. And he said, God calls us to things that are hard, not things that are easy. So what we have to do as a congregation, what each of us do individually, is we hold in one hand this thought from Ecclesiastes, from the great teacher. What time is it for you? What time is it for us now? And we hold this other question, who knows? Maybe God has called you together for such a time as this. Maybe we need to, of course, keep our eyes on what's going on here, what's going on inside these walls, but maybe it's time also to look up and look out and see what's going on around and listen for that voice, the voice of the Esthers that call us into deeper discipleship. Maybe that's what time it is. Thanks be to God.